Yo, 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 what is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the FanCast Movies Podcast. We are a podcast about movies, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. I'm sure my co-host Sean O'Connell will join me in wishing everyone that's listening to this, all three and a half of you, a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I hope they're all having a wonderful time with your family and enjoying some delicious food and spending some quality time with loved ones, because that's what we plan to do.
You could hear Sean's turkey clucking in the background.
My dog. I thought that was FedEx dog. Oh, have a drink. Everyone take a drink. My dog is barking.
Sean's turkey dog is clucking in the background because these are our sound effects. We go with very natural sound effects for this podcast. We like to keep everything practical with practical effects. But yeah, it is Thanksgiving week, so we are going to talk about a couple of things that we're thankful, Sean. And then we came up with a funny thing that we're going to each give something that we're not thankful for, something that we hope Hollywood turns around in the new year and hopefully, you know, rights the wrongs.
I think that fits the tone of our podcast. Sometimes we're able to get a little cynical and dip into the things that annoy us.
Exactly, exactly.
We'll save that.
Yeah, nobody's perfect.
Should I go first?
You are going to, but let's first I want to touch on the It's a Wonderful Life sequel.
This is big news.
Big news for the last few days, and it's the holiday season that we're in now, Thanksgiving week, and then we're going to get into December, and it's just Christmas overload and Hanukkah starts on Thanksgiving this year. But also, It's a Wonderful Life sequel. We hear this news. We got a couple of producers. They say, we're putting together It's a Wonderful Life sequel. It's called It's a Wonderful Life, the rest of the story. It's going to be focused on George Bailey's grandson, who's going to be shown by his mother, George Bailey's daughter, who in the original is the little girl at the end who says, every time a bell rings, an angel gets her wings.
Right.
She's going to be the star of the same actress is going to be the star of this sequel, and she's going to take around George Bailey's grandson, who's an evil guy, and show him what the world would look like without him. That was the setup. Everybody was like, oh my God, they're making a sequel. They're going to get it into the holiday season, maybe 2014, 2015. Everybody was up in arms. It's going to ruin my childhood, which they usually say. And then all of a sudden we learned that actually Paramount owns the rights to It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
And they can't just make a movie without Paramount's permission. So is that sort of where we stand right now? Is that where we're at? And how do you feel about an It's a Wonderful Life sequel?
Well, you know, I had the same reaction that you talked about. I was furious. Like, I don't want to see them go back and recycle something just because it has a familiar title, you know, and that you can tap into people's nostalgia to it. That story that they floated did not sound to me like the, oh my God, we have a story that we need to tell. It sounded like a rehash of the first movie, essentially, which then makes it feel like one big cheap cash grab.
Which sequels never do. Sequels never rehash the first movie.
No, not at all. But we had this conversation last week. It's one of those things where too much time has passed. And why would you even want to do a sequel to something as timeless as It's a Wonderful Life? There's just no need for it. Make an original story. So I was really glad to hear the Paramount sort of step forward and yeah, I think successfully squashed the story, you know, or stopped it dead in its tracks by just saying, that's sweet that you want to do this and all, but, you know, that's our property and you can't really touch it. And I hope that that's the end of it. Now, that's not to say that you can't take that story. I mean, one of my favorite Christmas movies is Bill Murray's Scrooged. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's just a retelling of the Dickens story. But it has a good spin on it. And it has his type of humor laced all through it. And I think that that's fantastic. So someone try to do that, you know, build a project like that. But leave the George Bailey story alone. Leave It's a Wonderful Life alone. There's certain films that I think just need to exist as they are and shouldn't be messed with. And that's one of them. I don't want to see like a Gone with the Wind sequel or a Casablanca prequel or anything like that. Just those are timeless classics. Leave them alone.
Yeah, it's a little weird. And I believe that this is the end of it. I don't know. The producer said that he thought the rights were in public. You'd think that they would arrange this before going to Variety. Like they would know exactly what the situation is. But the rights did lapse on It's a Wonderful Life for, I think, like 20 years or something. And networks were airing it left and right. And then Paramount came back and rebought the rights in the right. 90s. And they own it to this day. They've licensed it to NBC, who play it sparingly throughout the holiday season. But, yeah, so it seems like it's dead in the tracks. And I agree with you. You know, take this – and A Christmas Carol is a great example. There have been like 30 different movie versions, over 30 different movie versions of A Christmas Carol. But, you know, it's about taking the central premise of that. It's like, what would life be without me in it?
Right.
What would everybody around me, how would things go? And just applying it to an interesting, unique concept. But with this one, it seems like they want to use the It's a Wonderful Life name. They want to use the characters. And I don't know about that. I mean, there have been stage musicals of It's a Wonderful Life. There was actually a novel that was written about what happened to all of these characters after the movie. So this isn't something – this isn't territory that nobody has mined before. And, you know, I'm of the opinion where I don't know. I can go either way. You know, I'm not one of these people that gets attached to things from my childhood that says, you're going to ruin my childhood. I mean, look, I don't like Ghostbusters 2. I don't watch Ghostbusters 2. I don't think it's a very good sequel. But right. I still watch the hell out of Ghostbusters because that movie's awesome. And no matter what came after it, it doesn't change the fact that the original Ghostbusters is awesome. So I'm just one of those people that doesn't get too bothered by it. I feel like there is a place for wholesome entertainment like this. I don't know if I would make a big screen movie. I think something like this could do fine on a primetime network, on a TV, or on a Lifetime family, but you know, it does take something away when you take a classic like this and sort of it cheapens it all these years later.
What it makes me sad is that it makes me feel like we keep establishing a new low for this industry that I love so much. You know, and every time we talk about, like, hey, Ghostbusters 3 is going to go push through. It's funny you mentioned Ghostbusters. You know, when I hear that there's a producer out there who even wants to entertain the idea of making It's a Wonderful Life sequel because they don't have any new or fresh or original ideas, that's what makes me sad. It makes me feel like we've dug to yet a new low, and it keeps reminding me that nobody really wants to try anything brave and courageous, and which is going to be a topic I'm going to bring up in our What We're Thankful For, and that we're just happy to recycle things that people feel they have a connection to.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're listening to the news this week, you're hearing about this It's a Wonderful Life sequel, that is where it's currently at right now. Paramount is blocking it in a rare move. It's rare that we see a studio say, no, you can't make that sequel based on our beloved property that we own, which we never really see that happen. But in this case, Paramount's saying, no, we're going to block any kind of sequel. That doesn't mean that they're not going to get the bright ideas to make their own sequel.
Yeah, that's what I fear might come next.
You know, because, hey, you know, we're all in the business together. Let's get together. Let's talk. You have the original cast members. We have the rights. Da da da. B2B. We don't know. But as of right now, nothing's being made. I don't think, from what I've looked online, I don't think the producers have commented yet on Paramount's comment. So I guess that's the next thing we're waiting for, to see what they're going to do now. But as of right now, It's a Wonderful Life. The rest of the story is not arriving anytime soon.
What an awful title.
I know, the rest of the story, really. Ugh, God. But anyway, it's Thanksgiving week, and we're thankful for a lot of things this year. It's been a great year at the movies, I think. That's one thing that everybody should be thankful for. And there's some awesome movies in theaters right now. So be thankful for that you can step out of your house and go to the movies and see any number of really great movies that are all across the board are good. We have a couple in theaters this weekend. I think Catching Fire, if you haven't seen it yet, really great blockbuster. I think it's great, best blockbuster of the year. And Frozen, which is a terrific animated comedy from Walt Disney Animations, which brings me to the first thing that you're thankful for, Sean.
Yes, the resurgence of Walt Disney Animation. is my number one thing I'm most thankful for this holiday season and this year in general. Frozen is a fantastic film, not just a fantastic family film and not just a fantastic animated film, just a great movie that so many people can check out and dial into this great story. It has amazing songs. It's Broadway ready. I mean, it's a show or a story that's ready to be picked up and placed on a stage. It reminds me of classic Disney films like The Little Mermaid, like Lion King, like Beauty and the Beast, where the songs were as much a part of the film and the movie going experience, you know, as just getting to know these characters and following the story along. I've seen it twice now, and going back to see it the second time, I just had to sort of realize, like, is it really as good as I thought it was? And remind me, like, that Disney's on this roll right now with Tangled and with Wreck-It Ralph. I watch a ton of times with my kids because it's on cable now. And every time I watch it, I keep getting more and more into how creative it is. And you know, it goes back to, I think, Lasseter putting all of his attention back into Disney with Bolt, and then they started finding their legs with The Princess and the Frog. I think they're operating on a level that's above Pixar right now. I kind of think the baton's sort of been passed, you know, back over to Walt Disney Animation, and, you know, because Pixar's putting out Cars 2 and Brave, which was good, not great. I like Monsters University a lot, but it just feels like Disney is taking more chances. They're being a little bit more creative, more original, and I cannot be happier that when I see that Walt Disney Animation has a new feature coming out, I get excited. Back, you know, when it used to be Meet the Robinsons or Treasure Planet, you know, it was in a low, and it's definitely back on a high.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like it's great. It's important to have that balance between Walt Disney Animations and Pixar, especially as we're coming into a year, 2014, where we're not going to get a Pixar movie. And then 2015, we're hopefully, quote unquote, hopefully getting two original Pixar movies. Right. But I will see what happens. But yeah, it's important to have that balance because Pixar doesn't have big song and dance numbers in their movies. They're not known for that. They're known for sort of their character driven stories and the worlds that they take you to. So, yeah, that was a big part of growing up for me. The Little Mermaid, The Lion King, Hakuna Matata.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, these movies with these songs that you just will remember for the rest of your life. And to see Walt Disney getting back to that, which is something that Pixar does not do. You know, instead of trying to be the Pixar's little brother or Pixar's, you know, whatever, they're establishing, no, this is what we do and this is what we've done really well, and we're going to continue doing it. So,
makes me happy. What's your number one?
My number one is terrific female performances.
Okay.
I think we're at a year with fantastic female performances. I see a lot of pieces. I'm online a lot. I see a lot of people sort of calling for more female directors, which I still think that it is something that we need. We don't have enough female filmmakers making movies these days. And also important roles and big roles and roles where females can kind of take charge and lead films themselves. And we're starting to really get a lot of those. This year alone, and I mentioned them yesterday, one of my favorite movies, Frances Ha. Terrific film. Greta Gerwig is sensational in it. She didn't even get an Independent Spirit Award nomination yesterday, which I thought was probably the biggest snub of the Independent Spirit Awards, because she's great in it. And it's a great movie, sort of just about living every moment to the fullest, no matter whether something good or bad is happening in your life. You're present in every moment of your life. And that's what a great takeaway from that film. Short Term 12 is another one. Brie Larson is great. Amazing in this. And this is a girl that we sort of seen as a secondary character in 21 Jump Street. She had like one line in Don John. We haven't really seen her sort of come out of her shell yet. This is a film where she really does it. Terrific, terrific movie. Short Term 12. Brie Larson. Another one is In a World. Lake Bell. She wrote, mm-hmm. She directed, she stars in this film. It's a really great film about a girl who wants to break into the movie trailer voice industry, and she has this father who's like this legend, and she kind of competes with him for this. The trailer voiceover for a Hunger Games type movie, which leads me to Jennifer Lawrence, another mm-hmm. one in the Hunger Games. And Jennifer right. Lawrence, I've seen Jennifer Lawrence in Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and in American Hustle, which I'm not allowed to talk about yet. But I've seen those two movies within a couple of weeks of themselves. And to see how versatile this girl is at such a young age to be able to play Katniss and then to be able to go and – do American Hustle, which every other word out of her mouth is a curse word, and then to go put on blue makeup and play Mystique in a superhero movie in May, she just floors me. And I'm really happy to see not only are these females leading these independent films or getting nominated for these awards, but then they're also doing these big blockbusters. And I really hope Jennifer Lawrence in Hunger Games: Catching Fire proves that girls can open these big movies and make crazy money, because I think that Jennifer Lawrence, not only is she a revolutionary in the movie, her character, but she could help revolutionize the way Hollywood treats their females in blockbusters.
Might I mention Sandra Bullock, who will lead me into my number two?
Oh, just a little Sandra Bullock in Gravity.
If you had mentioned, a space, drama thriller where an astronaut has to fight, tooth and nail to get back onto our planet, I think, you might have automatically assumed that it was going to be a male lead. And the fact that Sandra Bullock carries this fantastic film, Gravity, from my number two person who I'm most thankful for. It's Alfonso Cuarón. Mm. And when we talk about, Hollywood just resting on their laurels and happy to crank out prequels and sequels and, other versions of stories we already know, we got a guy in Alfonso Cuarón who cannot help but tell an original story, every single time he picks up a camera. Gravity is still my number one movie of the year. I'm not quite sure what could surpass it. Just because I love the story. I love the technical aspects of it. I'm amazed that someone is able to pull off a film of that feat. But Cuarón's made Children of Men, which was a brilliant film. He did my favorite Harry Potter, proving that you can take over an adaptation of a literary property and still put your signature trademark voice all over it. E to Mama Tambien. He's just an amazing filmmaker, and I'm so happy that he's working, right? That he's one of these guys out there who you never really know what he's going to do next. He's kind of like Del Toro or Christopher Nolan, even when he's outside of the Batman franchise. When you hear that they start picking up a project and noodling through what they're going to do next, you get excited. Like, you cannot wait to see what new, fresh thing they're going to bring to the screen. And, Gravity came with so much anticipation. And you and I sat next to each other in Toronto when we saw it, and it just knocked it out of the park. And so he's absolutely one of the filmmakers I am most thankful for. There's a long list of them, but Cuarón's right at the top of it.
Yeah, and he's a great – I feel like Gravity has a really good shot too at winning the big ones, at winning Best Picture, winning Best Director. I mean, we're still a little far out, but I think it's got a shot. And if it does do that, I think it'll show that, look, sci-fi can play in this game. Yeah. And I think that – I hope he's a director that continues to take on projects he's passionate about. And I hope he doesn't win an Oscar and then they grab him and give him YA adaptation part four. You know what I'm saying? I hope that they actually say, look, we want to embrace what you're good at, and we want right. to give you stories that are just that you can take to different another level. And that's what he did with Gravity. And I hope that's what they do with him, and they don't try to stick him into a situation where it's like, really, you're doing Batman versus Superman 2?
Well, to that list, I would put Steve McQueen also, because I think he's another filmmaker who seems like he's always going to do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And he's not going to bend to the whims of, hey, we'll float you a $150 million budget if you tackle, Luke Cage. He's going to be like, no thanks, I have this offbeat story that I want to tell, and it's going to devastate you, but that's what I do, and people come to see that.
So. Yeah, and it's important that we have some of these visionaries that are – continuing to do that, because I felt, it sort of bums me out that we lost James Cameron for years on these Avatar movies. And look, I hope that his next Avatar movies blow me away. I really do. But he's a guy that I wish was doing some other stuff, because I'd love to see where his mind goes. And it's important to protect sort of these visionaries and giving them projects that are really passionate. And Guillermo del Toro is another one of those guys. I'm glad that he's trying to balance between doing really big movies, but then also doing stuff that he's really passionate about. And he seems like he's continuing to do that, so I'm happy for him. Another thing that I'm passionate about or thankful for is Marvel. Marvel,
nice.
The Marvel Studios. Look at this, because not only is Marvel Studios – not only did they put out two really great superhero movies this year, Iron Man 3 and – Thor 2: The Dark World, but they're sort of revolutionizing the way studios look at their franchises, and every year they do something different. I feel like after the Avengers came out, everybody was scrambling. Okay, now we have to figure out a way to connect our universes and get creative. But, you know, it seems like, you know, everybody's following in their footsteps, but I like it because everybody is taking a step back from their franchises, taking a step back from part two, part three, reboot, part two, part one, part two, part three, reboot. And they're saying, no, there's a different way we can look at this. Let's take what Marvel's doing. Let's take their footprint and now let's go and explore our universes and see what we can do. And then Marvel stepped up their game this year and said, okay, well, we started there. Now, you know what we're going to do? Now we're going to go to television. Not only are we going to go to television prime time, but no, now we're going to go to Netflix. You know, and so now everybody's like, oh my God. It's like they keep stepping up the game and all it's going to do is force everyone to reevaluate everything that they have, all of their big properties, not only in the way they can present them to audiences, but in the mediums that they can present them. And it makes me really excited. I'm not one of these jaded guys that say, oh, everybody's going to copy Marvel now, because I look at it as Marvel opening up the creative juices for everyone else. And forcing these studios to become more creative in the way that they deliver their big franchises, their big tentpole movies. And I think that's exciting for us because, you know what? Hey, I'd be down with a Fast and the Furious show on NBC that kind of bridges between the parts in the movies. You know, like I feel like that's the world that we're going to see in the next couple of years. And you thank Marvel Studios for doing that. And I'm thankful for Marvel Studios for having the balls. Because, you know, we all almost start with Ron Howard at the Dark Tower. They really wanted to adapt that series and do something where it was on TV and on the big screen, but it wasn't ready for it yet. Marvel Studios threw down that gauntlet and said, you know what? We're going to be the first ones that do it. And God bless them. And I'm thankful for them that they're doing it because I can't wait to see what it brings to us in the future.
Selfishly, I'm thankful for Marvel for keeping us in business. I don't know if film journalists online would have as many outlets as we do if not for the projects that Marvel continues to crank out. So thank you, Marvel, for keeping my family fed.
Yes, thank you. So all right. with our few minutes left, now we're going to do the things that we're not thankful for. Sean, you go.
All right. I'm going to go for these YA adaptations of every studio chasing any property that might potentially be the next – quote-unquote Twilight, Hunger Games, you know, fill in the blank, because it just feels like if you look at the slate of what's coming up, it's, you know, The Host, which was forgettable. It's Mortal Instruments, which was a bust. It's Divergent, which could be great, but who knows? And the studio already has four of them on the docket. It's Vampire Academy. It's, you know, all of these things that it doesn't feel like studios are chasing these projects because they wholeheartedly believe in them as stories that are worth telling. It feels like they fit a template of, we have a strong female character who could be Jennifer Lawrence. And we've got a sci-fi element that might be, you know, Ender's Game or something. So I want studios to take a step back and reevaluate why they're grabbing these titles, because, you know, it's getting to the point now where it's fan fiction, you know, that has a love triangle in it for potentially handsome actors and actresses is getting a green light and a three-picture deal just because, you know, Twilight connected with a big audience. That's not the way to work. I'm not thankful for this current trend because I think it's producing too much mediocrity that's being aimed at the teenage ticket buyer. And I think that there are some good stories out there that should be told, absolutely. But there's too many of them that are just being put into production because they might be the next Hunger Games.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Hunger Games catching fire. I'll say it again. It is this year's best blockbuster. I'm really excited about this franchise. I think it's the first YA franchise, with the exception of Harry Potter, that I've really kind of been engrossed in. But yeah, you know, it's, you have all these books, they have built-in fan bases, and Hollywood looks at that and says, look, let's just make movies. And but I agree. I think that they're biting off a little bit more that they can chew, and I hope that they do take a step back. And hey, look at Marvel. Marvel took a step back and they said, let's see, you know, what do audiences love the most about this, and let's kind of get creative with it and see what we can do. So, you know, I appreciated stuff like Warm Bodies, well, which was a little bit different.
Yeah.
Than everything else. I like that one. So I'd like to maybe see some of these offbeat ones that are a little bit more interesting, a little bit take more chances. I'd like to see come out. So
and also tied to that, stop giving projects a release date before you have a cast and a script. That's something I need the industry to stop doing immediately.
Well, so. You know what? Speaking of, the thing I'm not thankful for this year is Star Wars. And you know what? And I should be thankful. I should be. I grew up with Star Wars. I'm immensely excited to see that they're continuing this story after Return of the Jedi. We're going to see possibly see Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia back on the big screen. But if we don't see them, then at least we're going to hear about them, and we're going to hear about where their lives went after Return of the Jedi. And you know what? Hey, more power to them. We'll see. You know, in terms of sequels that we didn't necessarily need, It's a Wonderful Life. We didn't necessarily need more Star Wars sequels, but we're getting them. The problem is that from a year ago, a little over a year ago when they announced it, to now, we still like know nada, like nothing. It's no. they're just not. We know a release date. We know J.J. Abrams is directing, and that's about it. Basically,
and
R2-D2 is in it. And I mean, it's just been 12 months of rumor after rumor after casting sheet after this after that after da 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 da. Like, I am so burnt out on Star Wars,
right?
And we still don't know anything. Can you imagine when we actually know something? I can't even fathom when there's actually official announcements happening, because we've had 12 months of no official announcements, and it's still produced thousands upon thousands of stories. Imagine a world where we do have official announcements. And so I'm not thankful for the overabundance of Star Wars madness that have just invaded our brains.
Makes me laugh. The whole scenario just cracks me up, that all they have done so far is announce that they are doing one, and it's fed this beast for a year. And we have 2 years to go.
I know, and I can't even fathom. I saw a video interview with J.J. Abrams on MTV this week, and he looks like he's in good spirits. God bless the guy, because I don't know, if he's still alive after this first one comes out, I can only imagine. But you know what? I'm happy that it's in his hands. I feel like he is somebody who, like us, grew up with this franchise, and that it was very, very important to him. And I think that he definitely has the fans' best interest at heart when he's moving forward with this. And so I'm happy that he's the commander on this ship. Even though the ship isn't moving anywhere, I'm happy that he's the commander on it. And I'm curious to see. I'm hoping that 2014 brings us some actual Star Wars news that's concrete, that we can talk about and have conversations about and actually know what we're discussing. So that's what I'm not thankful for this year.
I'm convinced this movie's never going to happen.
It is going to happen, Sean.
I'm just going on record saying that.
But you know what? to end on a positive note,
all right,
this has been a really great year for movies. And,
oh, yeah.
I'm thankful that we have seen so many great ones, and I'm thankful that we've had this podcast, that we've been able to have conversations about so many of these movies, and I hope that we get to continue having conversations into 2014, and that everybody out there listens to them and enjoys them and gets something out of them, takes something away.
We're thankful for you, listeners. We love you guys.
Yeah, well, I love you. I love you like a friend. I love not love like a friend.
No, I love you. I love you guys. All of you guys listening to us.
Sean takes it a step
that
further.
I care not to discuss with my family.
Sean's taking
it serious. I love you all. Thank you.
But yes, thank you for listening to this podcast. It's something that I really enjoy doing. I really enjoy talking with Sean every week about whatever it is that's going on. And we'll leave it at that. You know, enjoy your Thanksgiving, everybody. I hope that wherever you are in the world, that you take some time out to think about the things that you're thankful for this year, and to kind of resonate with that, or resonate with those ideas and those feelings.
And stay excited for all the movies that are coming up. December is going to be a huge month. We have so many good things to talk about, from The Hobbit to Saving Mr. Banks to Anchorman 2 to some Oscar contenders are going to be flying under the radar. There's a lot of good things to get to.
And we will talk about them starting next week. Sean, thank you very much. Go to the movies this weekend. There's a ton ton out, ton in theaters. Sean, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving break and Thanksgiving week. And,
thank you, sir. Enjoy your time with your family. I hope you have a great day with everybody. And thank you so much, everyone, for listening to us. And have a great Thanksgiving.
And enjoy your weekend at the movies.